Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Ben Pakulski in the house for another episode of the Muscle Expert Podcast. Thank you for your patience. It's been a few weeks since we did one, but we made it worth your while. We've got the man himself, questionably, and I would argue one of the the greatest bodybuilder of all time, Flex Wheeler. Flex, welcome, man.
Hey, bro. What's up, man? It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your podcast, bro. And I appreciate you even wanting to do one with me.
Oh, man. Jeez. So, you know, I'm going to start the podcast with the story of my event Friday night at the event. You know, I think it was the coolest experience of my life. Well, it's certainly one of them. So for those of you that know me, I grew up a huge fan of bodybuilding, huge fan of Flex Wheeler, and I had this amazing honor and privilege of sitting literally directly between Flex Wheeler and Chad Nichols. Chad is the winningest coach of all time and Flex Wheeler's coach for a long time, and I literally was kind of like wedged in between these two guys and got to sit and hear them commentate back and forth on the Olympia. You're sitting about 10 rows back, and that was honestly one of the coolest experiences of my life. I was kind of looking back and go, man, if I was a 17-year-old kid, like, I'd just be going nuts, you know? So the first time I saw Fice compete in person was 98 at the Olympia and in New York.
Oh, that was a good year.
Yeah, they're all good years, man. How are they not good years, right? And then you had this, you had this amazing career. And, you know, certainly one of the best of all time, man, and it's definitely an honor. And, you know, the first thing I want to talk about, man, is, you know, we kind of briefly touched on Friday was the idea that you got to compete with Dorian Yates and Ronnie Coleman, and you three are absolutely the greatest three bodybuilders ever to walk the face of the planet. And I want to discuss with you, man, how it was to compete against them. And I know Dorian is going to have an opinion on, or he does in an upcoming movie, which we'll talk about. He has an opinion on how it was to compete against you, but I want to flip it on you and talk about how was it to compete against them, because we're going to get to hear what they have to say in your movie. So
definitely, you know, I remember actually, you know, that was my fourth competition in 93, because I competed in the Ironman Honor Classic French and German Grand Prix. So that was my fifth competition as a pro. And, you know, my four shows went really well. You know, went really well. So here I am standing up against. So it went okay, but here I am standing up to Dorian, and we had met before. We had met a year before when he had won the Olympia the first time, and I was still an amateur. And he walked through the gym, Go's Gym Venice, where I used to train at, and I remember thinking, "Wow, that's Dorian." And he walked over and he said, "Hey, Flex, how you doing?" And, you know, I was like, damn, you know who I am. And, you know, and we shook hands. And honestly, from there, we actually we got along. We just hit it off. You know, sometimes how you meet a person and just on GP, just on general purpose, you either like the guy or the person or you don't. Just on general sight, you know.
Yep,
so we just kicked it off, you know. So next thing you know, I'm standing next to him on stage. And I honestly, I got to tell you, that was the first time that I could ever feel someone's presence standing next to me. And I'll try to describe it. You know, out of all the shows I did as an amateur and even my pro debut and everything, you know, I felt very comfortable on stage, no matter who it is. I was nervous, but I felt comfortable. But I could actually feel him next to me taking up room. And I knew my thought, I remember, you know, clearly, it's like, wow, I can actually feel this guy presence next to me. So that put me on notice right there, because he was the biggest competitor I ever competed against, and obviously it was Mr. Olympia going for a second time. So I wasn't only conscious of that, I can feel the man's presence next to me. And that really threw me off, because other than Ronnie, he's the only other person that I could feel their presence next to me, dominating me as I stood next to him. So it was interesting. But at the end of the day, you know, for Dorian and for Ronnie, I mean, especially when you're done, and you probably can't relate to this and probably shouldn't relate to this, because you should have the eye of the tiger, and it's win-win-win. It doesn't matter who you stand against right now. It's winning. That's the name of the game. You know, I've always said, you know, there's first place and then there's second. Who cares? There's first and there's last. So, but it's an honor. You know, I've had the great honor of standing next to the shadow, Dorian Yates, and then I had the honor of standing – you know, next to Ronnie in a number of different battles, and he'll go down as the greatest Mr. Olympia of all times with 8-time, you know, consistent wins. So, you know, the only thing I regret in my career is I didn't turn pro in 91, and if I did, I would have had the honor of being able to say that I stood next to Lee Haney. You know, that's the only one I missed out on during my era, you know what I mean? But it's just, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, what more could you ask for to stand next to two guys who will go down written in history as being, you know, great competitors?
That's awesome, man. And people are going to love these insights. And I know I haven't seen the movie yet, man, but I saw the trailer for your DVD, which is coming out now, which has interviews with Ronnie and Dorian. So if anyone wants to hear what Dorian and Ronnie have to say about competing with Flex, you can watch Flex's upcoming DVD. So, man, you know, fast forward to the Olympia this year, and, you know, we had this awesome, or at least I got to witness this awesome dialogue between you and Chad, and, you know, would you mind offering, I'm not going to say anything, man, would you mind offering your opinion on the Olympia this year? Well, seriously, man,
you know,
I mean, I'll give my opinion, you know, I'm outspoken, man, I'm afraid to say but, yeah, I mean, What are your thoughts, man? You know, if we were to look back and compare this to all the Olympias that you fought and battled, and, you know, obviously if you were on stage there, you know, you'd be reigning probably maybe 7 or 8 times Mr. Olympia yourself had you come in a different generation. But, you know, what are your thoughts, man? What are your thoughts on the competitors of today? What are your thoughts on where bodybuilding is going? Because obviously it's the hot topic. You know, is bodybuilding dead? Is bodybuilding, you know, are all the guys missing the right objective? Or what's missing, man?
You know, I think all generations are all different. I mean, you know, you go back to, you know, you go back to Arnold's generation when he competed. It was different than ours. And, you know, the sport evolves, whether we think it's positive or negative, you know, the sport evolves. And, you know, I have the honor of being able to say I'm pretty much friends with all the guys, all the top 10 guys in Olympia. You know, I get along great with them, and we have our own personal dialogue. So, you know, I thought the placing was different than what I had in my mind, you know, but what I do understand, and not to get too deeply into it because I don't want to offend anybody, but what I understand is this, okay? Unlike an MMA fight, if I just choke you out, there's no denial. If I break your arm or if I break your jaw and you can't fight anymore, there's no denying it, all right? You know, but in bodybuilding, the point is, and the reason why there's such a huge dialogue on what people think is, it's a subjective sport. Unfortunately, it's a subjective sport. You have a certain amount of judges, and they input their opinion based on these professional values that they have to go through. And I'm not a judge, so I don't know what those are. But so it's like. And I always give this analogy, and I'll try to give it, and hopefully, you know, the people who are listening understand, and let me know if it makes any sense to you. If, say that you have two twins, for us, hey, we like women, so it's two beautiful girls. So say you have, I just want to make that clear. Anyway, so say you have two beautiful twins walk through the door, and for the sake of this conversation, they are just knocked down, drag out, beautiful, right? Identically. But for some reason, okay, for some reason, you're drawn more to, let's say, twin number one. And for whatever reason, I'm drawn more to twin number two. That's presence over the other person. That's what you call presence. That's one thing you want to create when you're on stage. Because if you have 15 seconds to view me, and I have ability to steal presence from 24 other people on stage, I've cost you the inability to judge them fairly because I took up so much of your time. So there lies the problem with bodybuilding, where, you know, it's not whether it's really right or wrong, but these judges are giving their input on who they feel look the best. And we all, however many millions that are watching or viewing, have our input too. Therefore, it's an argument. It always will be an argument, you know, just like, towards the end of my career, I started feeling that I was number one regardless of what the judges awarded me. And I started feeling very comfortable with myself, like, no, I feel I'm number one, and you're not going to chain me down by making me believe I'm number two. Because let's face it, and the factuality of it is, and it's probably happened to a few shows that you've been to, say that a person is picked as a winner. they get their awards, and during that ceremony of getting awards, they, oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. The guy who's number two is actually number one, and the guy who's number one is actually number two. Immediately, that guy who's number one, he's now depressed because he's number two. And that guy who was depressed because he was number two, now he's elated because he's number one. Tell me, what's different? There's nothing different other than the accolade of the judges. So therefore, I started to think that way, and I had to start believing in myself. So it wasn't a disrespect to Ronnie or anyone else. It's like, no, I feel that I'm number one, and just because you award me number two, that doesn't mean that I'm going to walk away thinking I lost. No, I'm number one. And if you understand that analogy, if you ever been to a show when they missed, gave a person a certain prize, that happens right there on stage. But riddle me this. What is the difference? No, what happened? Other than the judges changing the award.
Right.
That person is either happy or not. They're not happy with the work. They're not happy with the condition they came in, all the hard work and trials and tribulations that they've been through. They're only comforted by a judge's accolade. So I started thinking different, like, no, I'm not gonna rip myself off that way.
Right.
So that's my look into the whole sport.
And it's completely based on someone else's subjective opinion, right? And that's the thing I tell it to everybody, man, is the idea that if you're going to base your self-worth off of someone else's opinion of you, you're in for a long, long, hard career, man. You got to enjoy the process.
You're right. Yeah. Bodybuilding won't be the career that you want to do. Now, there's nothing wrong with being pissed off about your overall place. And, yes, I love to lose. I'm a big crybaby. I'm very emotional because I put everything I have into it. I'll walk up to that line. So if I don't get what I want, I'm not going to be happy. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to go and kick my dog and shoot my cat over it because, you know, I have to – only if I knew that I failed myself, then I'm really pissed because I got to wait till next year to redeem that. But if I know that I put everything into it like in 99, no, I'm not going to walk away unhappy with my work.
So 99 was the first year I was in Vegas. And
yeah.
was that your opinion, the closest you ever were to winning?
Yeah, well, that's my opinion, but not on paper. It doesn't show that because in 98, I actually lost by a point or 2 points or something like that, or 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, and this is factual. This is factual. So 98, I wasn't 100%. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say I was 100%, but, you know, like some people feel, they feel that I was. So they thought I should have won. So anyway, my point is, okay, if I lost by 1 point, and I don't feel that I bought 100% of what I could do to stage, then there's room for improvement. So I came in 17 pounds heavier, and I was in better condition, and Ronnie wasn't the same Ronnie that he was in 98. So I'm like, wow, I got him. You know, he kind of, you know, slipped a little bit, and I gained some ground. I got him. I only got to make up 1 point. This surely has to be enough, right? And, you know, as you'll see, even in my video, my movie, Dead or Dream, you know, all of us thought that. We were talking backstage. We all talked backstage. You know, Sean walked up to me. Kevin walked up to me. Damn, man, you got him. It's yours. So I thought I did, and I felt that I did my work. But if you look on paper, he actually then beat me by a perfect score, which really threw me off.
Right.
So, you know, at the end of the day, now I can sit back and say, wow, I took second behind Ronnie, the greatest Miss Olympian in the world. I can relax and I can say that and enjoy that accolade. But no, in the heat of the moment as an athlete, never do you, never should you, accept, you know, second, you lost. You didn't do it. You failed.
Right.
And that was my mind frame then, so.
Tell you what, man, I was at the Olympia in 98 and 99. 98, I was 17 years old. It was my first Olympia experience. I thought you had a man. I mean, I really did. I was cheering for you the whole time. And that was my first bodybuilding show ever. I'd never been doing an amateur show. And I really didn't know anybody. I mean, it was completely based on like, hey, you know, I think this guy has a better physique. You're in better condition. I had good seats too. I think I was sitting like second or third row. And Ronnie obviously looked amazing, and it was coming off that hot streak, having won like two or three shows leading into it. So, but hey, man, I mean, not that it matters now, but, you know, I think everybody, I mean, 99, same thing, you know, you look great. And, dude, I think it's just an amazing thing to have accomplished what you did and been so consistent and, you know, definitely the most aesthetic physique of all time, man. Well, let me ask you this. At what point did you take up bodybuilding? At what point did you realize you had a gift? Was it kind of a quick thing, or was it like a process? Or I think people are all going to be interested in that.
Sure. No, I started when I started working out when I was like 13 years old. Actually, 11 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. My dad had bought me one of those 110-pound weight sets that is made out of concrete that's, you know, have plastic over it, that if you drop it too hard, the plastic cracks and the concrete spills out. But it was just something to do, Ben. I mean, I was, you know, my nickname back then was Skinny Kenny. It wasn't Flex Wheeler. I was a skinny guy, and I wasn't able to play football like my brother Donnell. He was a football star, so I was too small to do that. So, no, I just kept doing that, and finally I got a gym membership and some guys, a guy named Joe Jennings from my hometown and Jeff Lawson from my hometown, who were kind of big names back then. They were the kings of the castle in my little hometown, and, you know, they talked to me about bodybuilding and competing, and, you know, I went and tried it, you know, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. I remember Jeff Lawson telling me, "No, man, you have great genetics," and here I am, you know, the skinny kid, and I'm like, you know, what does that mean? Genetics? You call me black? You call me skinny? I mean, I was very ignorant and heartened. You know, that's how ignorant I was. He goes, "No, son, that's not what it is. But anyway, let's go do this." So I just started. It was something to do. I had nothing going on. I was fighting in martial arts, and that was my love. And, you know, I had nothing else going on. I loved working out. So I just went on, and I just competed in a whole bunch of shows from the age of 13 all the way to 19 years old, when I finally heard the words, you know, mention, you know, quote unquote steroids or sports technology drugs. And that's when I fell into that world and everything. But I didn't, you know, again, as you'll see in my movie, anyone who purchased it, Dare to Dream, you know, I was very insecure as a child and even as a competitor. And I never believed in myself, and, you know, shame on me, but it is who I am. You know, I never, so to answer your last question, and no, I never believed in myself until 99. So if you imagine all the years that I competed as a pro, 99 was the first year it dawned on me that I actually thought I was good.
Wow. Even after you having won your first, you won your first four pro shows, did you?
Yeah. I thought it was a fluke. I thought it was a fluke. You know, I guess it's a double-edged sword. It cuts both ways. It cuts in a good way and it cuts in a bad way, because I never relaxed about that. So I didn't get lackadaisic. You know, I stayed hard on a grind. The bad part about it is I never enjoyed that process either, because I didn't think it was a big deal. I mean, when I competed in my first show of the Ironman, I was able to and honored to be able to defeat Lee Labrada, who was ranked number two in the world behind Lee Haney. And my thought was, oh, okay, judges made a mistake. They're going to figure it out. You know, Lee Labrada is a seasoned pro. He's going to come and rip me a new one next weekend at the Arnold Classic. And then I end up beating Lee Labrada and Vince Taylor, number two and number three ranked competitors, with a perfect score. And I was just thinking, wow, these judges, wow, maybe they're not as smart as I thought. Shit, you know, they're going to figure this out. They'll probably call me up later on and take my trophy and my money back, you know, because they made a mistake. Those are my thoughts, honestly. Those are my thoughts that I had. That whole year, it's like, they're going to call me. I better not spend this money. They're going to take it back. And, like, you know, you freaking, you a chameleon. You didn't really want. You know, you didn't really want. Those are my jacked up thoughts. But, like I said, what it did is it kept me hungry, and I didn't walk around thinking I was, you know, I was all that, because I just didn't believe it. So it really kept me hard on my grind. The harsh part about it is I very, very seldom do I recall what really went on stage in those times, because I would just dismiss it. You know, I would, that night, if I won, I would have pizza with some friends and some Coca-Cola or something like that. I'd go to bed, and when I wake up the next morning, I'd be like, that's yesterday. Who gives a damn about yesterday? If I go into my next show and I get my ass handled, it's going to be a has-been. So put that away. That's a pass. Who gives a damn about the pass? You know.
Man, I think if we asked your competitors if you believed that you deserved it, they may give us a different opinion. you're obviously known as being a very the probably correct word is an arrogant guy, and you say that due to your hiding your insecurities, right?
Yeah, definitely. And again, the great thing about my movie is it's nothing about bodybuilding. It has nothing to do with training. It has to do with my life from from a little boy all the way throughout my pro career. And, you know, the great thing about it is I'm honored to have people like Sean Ray, Kevin LeBron, Dorian Yates, a great mentor of mine, Chad Nichols, and Ronnie Coleman, basically tell Charles Glass and Peter also, and Rico McClinton, Chris Cormier, telling my story through their own eyes of what they've seen. And they all have different outlooks on who I was as a person at various different times. And then towards the end, you have Neil Spruce, who's incredible guy, and like a father figure to me my whole career, and my business partner now, who is Stan Efferty. And they're giving all their depictions on me as a person. So it's interesting to sit back all these years and see who had it right and who didn't. But no, it talks about all that. And no, I mean, the truth of the matter is, I was very insecure. Very low self esteem. I was very suicidal from the age of, I think, 14 was the first time I tried, and I was in my late 30s the last time I tried. But I had a lot of problems that I dealt with growing up as a child, that things that happened to me. So, it's sad and unfortunate. But the overall picture with the story is telling is no matter what you've been through as a child, or whether you're, behind enemy lines or in front of enemy lines, and you have a silver spoon in your mouth, you need to dare to dream. You need to dream. And a lot of times people, they see people like you who've made it. They see, what you drive or how you act, or all these countries you go through, and they see all the glitz and the glory part of it. But they have no idea what Ben went through to become this person. So most of the time people don't, they have a disconnect of who I am and how I got to that point, and what trials and tribulations I have through that I went through. And when, when unfortunately you have a less desirable childhood, like I did, no matter who you are and show that you build around you, you're really still that person on the inside. So to me, I was always Skinny Kenny. You would think probably it would my, and another thing is not to be too long winded, but another thing is I learned at an early age, people take advantage of people's weaknesses. So I started, creating this alter ego guy, this Flex Wheeler guy who was tough and didn't take anything from anyone, because, Kenny always got, taken advantage of in various different ways throughout his life. So, no, it all spawned from being insecure, and the movie really paints that picture. And it's interesting to see people like Peter McGuff on what their take is, and who really read me and had me right, and who thought I was arrogant or whatnot.
Yeah, man, I look forward to it. It sounds awesome.
I'm going to get you out a copy of it. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on it, and it's interesting because Chad had a pretty good read on me. It's interesting to see who didn't and who did, but it's shocking. I've always called myself the world's greatest chameleon, because I could camouflage myself to look what I look like, whatever people wanted to see, as long as I didn't show them the real me. I always thought I was incredibly great at it, but it's interesting to see actually a few people got me no matter what. I couldn't hide from them. And 9 times out of 10, if you read me and you knew who I was and you seen through it, I didn't hang around you, because I didn't like that at all.
So. That's awesome, man. And most people see, the successful guy with this amazing body and everything in the world going for you, and they assume that it's always the case. They assume that's, always how you are and always how you look. And they never see, the battles behind the scenes, and everybody out there thinking, Flex got everything handed to him and he was gifted. And it's so awesome to hear these insights, man, that like, hey, no, man, you have to work just as hard as everybody else. As much as you may have been given, a genetic gift, your struggle may have been more psychological than it was physical.
Yeah.
So, and it's probably even more difficult, right? And that's something that everybody battles is, and it's the psychological game is way harder than the physical game as a pro athlete. Like the physical part's easy, man. If I just had to work out, didn't have to think about it, life would be easy.
Right. No, you're 100% right. Yeah. I think that's where the saying comes from, where the mind goes, the body will follow. And people who are mentally strong and mentally tough, it's one thing that helps me to be aware of that, even though I have to except I am who I am, my strength and my weaknesses. That's something that took me almost 45 years to accept me as who I am. This is you, man. You're good and you're bad. But it's interesting, I used to always think, if you go back to the Cowboys and Indian days, right? A cowboy would get shot in the gut and he'd be like, oh, I'm shot. Nah, better go to the doctor. That was their mind. They never thought about dying or anything like that. But watch somebody get shot now. Oh my God, I'm dying. it's a right. mental mind frame. You know, yeah. it's yeah. it's the same saying, I have the glasses half empty or the glasses full. The glass is half, no matter what. It's your perception of whether it's half full or it's half empty. So your perception controls everything, because factually, the glass is only half. So you can say, oh, my God, man, I got half left. It can be like, damn it, I only got half left. Right. Shoot. Right. The fact is, it's half. So it's how we perceive things. So for me, I've always perceived myself a certain way because of my childhood, and I can never run from that. I can never run from that, no matter what I tried to achieve. So I was always trying to be an overachiever because I was always trying to convince myself that I'm not the person who I think I am. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I had to really come to realization that, no, I am. I am that guy. And, you know, right. I have to accept who I am and move on.
Especially bodybuilding, man, is really good at keeping you in this unique mental state, because you're always judging yourself from the outside as opposed to actually taking inventory on who you are on the inside, right? Like, as a bodybuilder, we are this massive billboard that walks around, and we're constantly comparing ourselves against everybody else, and we're constantly externally trying to validate ourselves, and you don't ever allow yourself to go introspective and, you know, spend some time working on your mental state. We spend so much time working on our physical state. So, I mean, I think every bodybuilder at some point in their life battles that, man. It's like, you know, I don't think I was a particularly really insecure guy, but I don't think I was particularly gifted in any way. And, you know, I still don't. And, you know, people argue that. And my struggle is mental, man. I mean, just like yourself, is like self-belief. You know, realizing you can be as great as you probably can. You know, I think, you know, there's the struggle is always great, and everybody just sees all these guys are these amazing statues on stage, but the struggle is mental.
So, yeah, it is.
Ours is a unique sport, man.
No, it is. And, you know, the thing about it is our, you know, like I said, if it was MMA or boxing or martial arts like I did before, there's no argument. If I hurt you and you're not able to go on, there's no doubt I did that, me. But our sport, we're judged by other people, and we're judged by our peers, and we're judged by the public as we walk around and we navigate ourselves through this world. So it's all about acceptance of by someone else. It doesn't matter how great we think we are. If we go and we get our ASS handed to us, we're not. So, you know, that's different. I know I always idolized, and it angered me when I would meet people who felt that they were great, because I would look at it and that would shine a light on my weakness that I didn't think I was. So people like Sean Ray, people like Kevin LeBrone, who always believe that they should be number one and that they're going to go in the show and win. I used to listen to them and just sit back and think, wow, man, what's wrong with me that I can't even dare to dream. I wouldn't even dream that. I would never dream that I was going to win the Olympia. Now, when it came to the Ironman or the Honor Classic or any other show, I'm like, I'm the man, I'm the guy to beat. And I had that in my mind, whether it happened or not, that I was able to achieve those thoughts. But I that number one spot, I don't know, it feared me so greatly. So it takes a very confident person, but a good friend of mine, Victor Balco, Victor Conti from Balco Laboratories, who's great friends with athletes who are way beyond what I've ever done, Barry Bonds and all those great athletes. You know, one day he was sitting talking to me, and it was in 98 when I was getting ready to compete, 99, I was getting ready to compete in Olympia. And we're having these heart-to-heart conversations. And, you know, I was very candid. I was very open with him. I depict him as a true friend of mine. So I was telling him my struggles mentally, and he just stared at me. And he just listened. He was quiet. He goes, you know what, Flex? You know what's the common denominator with all you great athletes? You're all the same. He goes, trust me. He goes, you, Barry, all the other guys, I won't mention everybody else he's worked with. He goes, but you guys are all the same. You guys have the self-doubt. You guys have the self-doubt about yourself, but you don't allow that self-doubt to hinder you. It's a driving force behind you guys. Right. He goes, but I just want you to help you understand. He goes, you're not alone. You're not a weirdo, and you're not crazy. This is right. normal for guys who are at your elite level. You're never happy, and you always have such a higher standard that you hold yourself to. You're never able to achieve it, which is like a carrot chasing a carrot, a horse that's chasing a carrot that's connected right. to the horse's head. He's never going to chase it, but he's going to run as hard as he can until he kills himself chasing that dream. And he helped me to understand that in 99, but still with him telling me that and helping me to understand these other great athletes battle with that too, it still didn't really work. It still didn't really, you know, sink in until damn near a decade later once I retired. So
that's exactly what it is, though. I think the argument is the reason you never let it sink in is because if you're always in the public eye and you're always under the subjective observation of everyone else, you never take the time to be you. You're always putting on this persona, and you never get comfortable with who you are. And I'm sure that's the same with every pro athlete, man. You're always in the eye, and you always have to put on this act, and you never just chill out and be you. I think every pro athlete has to go through that at some level, man. And everybody dreams of being this amazing pro athlete, but then they don't see all the struggles that go with it. It's so unique.
No, they don't. And I wish like yourself, I wish more athletes were more open about it, because if so, I think it would help a lot of the kids who idolize us or, you know, they dare to dream their own dreams, that it would help them to understand that they're normal. And that they can then go ahead and shoot for it and get everything they have. But I mean, I never knew until I when I watched my movie Dare to Dream, I never knew what Sean really thought about me. I never knew what Kevin really thought about me, you know, or any of the guys, Chris or Rico. I never knew. So when I sat and I watched the movie for the first time last Friday, I watched it Friday night, and I was effed up. I was effed up for about 13 hours. I was emotional. I couldn't think. I was just really, really effed up because it just took me into deep waters of what I thought about myself to look at what I was saying, because the movie took over 3 years for us to make. So for me [S2] Wow. [S1] To sit back and watch all this, you know, it brought me back to those times. But I never knew. Sean, you know, everybody was incredibly candid and open. Sean made it right there on camera. You know, Flex is always greater than me. You know, I knew I could never beat this man. You know, he made me better than I ever would have been. You know, Kevin saying the same thing. If it wasn't for Flex, I wouldn't have never been a Kevin that I was. You know, freaking Ronnie, who's the greatest, you know, Mr. Olympian competitor I ever competed against on camera, saying Flex made me who I was. If it wasn't for Flex, I wouldn't have eight. I wouldn't have none. So my what that did for me is all that hard work and how I beat up on myself mentally, physically, and privately, I finally understood that my peers respected me, and that's all we really want out of life. No matter what it is, I don't care if you're broke or you're on the street, or you're the richest man in the world, or you're straight, or you're gay, you're black, you're white, or you're purple. You just want to be accepted who you are, and to know right. that your peers who you've had these fierce fights with on stage accepted you and respected for who you are and what you've done, man, that's better than any trophy you could ever get, because that trophy gets old and dusty, and that prize money, I'm sorry, we spend it. You know, I know I did, you know, that car, that shiny car, it gets old, you know, and it's not new anymore. But to know that your hard work was accepted by the public, and more so the guys who competed against you, damn, I mean, that's incredible. So, yeah, it was really deep. It was really deep and well put together.
Nice, man. I look forward to it. Now, you're not getting off the hook without talking about this year's Olympia, man. So what were you missing?
We're good. So whatever you want.
Because this is going to come back. Because one question I want to ask next is, do you think that's what's missing from our sport now is these actual fierce competitions? Because really, it's Phil versus Kai and then everybody else. And Kai backed out this year,
right.
obviously. You know, is that what's missing? Is with you guys, man, if you have a 98-99 Olympia, anyone in the top eight could have very easily
yep.
walked away with that show, man. They were
yep.
the top 10. Like, you go to a guy like Milos, that guy was an amazing bodybuilder who just kind of got overlooked because
yeah.
he's competing against you, Sean, Kevin, Ronnie. But, like, if he was competing,
right.
I'd be destroying guys. So do you think
right.
that's what it was, is the fierce competition? And maybe the fact you guys all trained in the same place, you all knew what each other looked like, and everyone wanted to be the man within Gold's Venice? Like,
you know,
I don't want to ask that question now. I want you to talk about the Olympia. Who in your
right.
eyes won the Olympia?
Wow, you're gonna go hot, man. You know, I talk to Phil all the time. We text each other, and I tell him that I want him to go and crush everybody and this, that, and other. Me personally, And I think, you know, possibly Phil, if he really challenges himself, when he goes back and he looks at photos over his last three Mr. Olympias, he might come to the same decision that I came to, that he wasn't the best that he could have been. There was room for growth there. I personally thought Dexter had changed tremendously. I've never seen him that hard, that size and condition. And I thought Dennis Wolf also stepped up his game also. So me personally, I thought that Phil left the door cracked, and that Dexter or Dennis Wolf could have easily walked through that door, and I would have had no argument with either one of them winning. So that's my outlook on the Olympia.
Yeah, man, that's how I judge it. Like Friday night, you know, Phil clearly wasn't winning, man. And Saturday night, I think he deserved to win. But how about Sean, man? What was your thought on Sean?
Sean Roden, you know, I thought he looked great. You know, for the first time, I know people have always said that they thought his legs were too massive for his upper body. I've never thought that. But I know, and hear me out, I didn't go to Saturday night. I didn't go to the finals. So I wasn't able to see people change. So I'm not able to depict on whether Phil came back, which I know he has ability. He's done it before. He changes. He does what he's supposed to do, and he comes back, and he slams that door in people's faces. So I wasn't able to see that. Sean, for the first time, I did notice that his legs are a little bit more powerful than his upper body is. His legs, I mean, it's they're freakish, the sweep and everything. Right. I think it's something that he needs to address. Just like yourself, we've always talked about, man, your legs are just ungodly. But you have been able, over time, to address that and bring your upper body up to where they're matched now. For the first time, I was able to look at Sean and say, wow, his legs are a little are more ahead of his upper body. And mm-hmm. I've seen – and this is – listen, this is just my opinion. I'm not God. You know, my opinion isn't all say so. It's just my opinion. So if someone disagrees with me, it doesn't bother me. If somebody wants to be angry, I'm sorry. It's just my opinion. I'm not saying you're a mother, you know, an MF or calling you out of your name. It's just my opinion. So I also thought that I seen Sean in better condition. I thought that he was a little bloated around his stomach. It wasn't as tight. He's known to have a very tight midsection and be very crisp. And I don't think that he actually had that. I was when I heard the news about 2 o'clock in the morning that Sean had beat Dennis Wolf, I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming, you know.
Right.
And,
Yeah, man. Apparently he was 17 or 18 pounds heavier than he was last year, and to put on that type of stage weight, man, that's a lot of weight to control. That's a lot of mass, and they just ended up putting look like a little bit of weight in his stomach. And you know, a lot of guys are guilty of that, trying to play the size game, and myself included, man. And it's just a matter of you know, learn from your mistakes, come back, get better, and you know, hopefully make the progress you need. And the way I always, I mean, you could tell me if I'm wrong, but this is why I look at the Olympia, man, is they're looking for a reason to not give you the Olympia. Like, you have to beat the champ, and they're looking for one single little reason to say, no, that's why you didn't win, man. And that was the reason for the, you know, I think Dexter was perfect condition and size, and he was my winner. But like anybody else, you know, Sean's they're looking for that one little reason that you left the door open, you didn't deserve to win. And Sean would turn to the side, and his stomach hanging out. And that was a reason enough, especially considering Phil came back so much better Saturday night. You know, that was reason enough. So the next question,
you know, and
I think that's what's missing.
Yeah, definitely. I just don't recall. I don't recall too many guys during my era who had the stomach problem, and I don't actually know what it is, because listen, there hasn't, to my knowledge, and I'm not that deep in the game anymore, and nor do I want to be, but to my knowledge, I don't think they created a new drug. There's the same drugs that were out back when I was competing. People may use them differently, but they're the same. So I'm not really sure, but I do know that in my era, in the era before me, Lee Labrada, you know, poison was an art. It was an art form to us. So we were very skilled, and all of us practiced for hours. I would, as I said before, 5 days before, I mean, 5 weeks before a show, Chris and Rico, we'd go in a posing room, and I'd spend an hour in there going over my mandatory poses and looking in the mirror to see how I won, and being able to control myself and to quote unquote, be able to breathe through my diaphragm, even at a time where I'm extremely exhausted. And we were always aware when we turned to the side, you really have to breathe through your diaphragm. And I think that part of the art is gone. For one, they don't judge a posing round anymore, so people don't have to put that type of work and time into it. But I learned from one of the greatest bodybuilders I think that I ever competed against, and that was Lee Labrada. And I remember the second time we competed, where I was dying on stage at the Honor Classic, and I'm hiding behind the great Robbie Robinson. I have the honor to say it. I stood on stage with Robbie Robinson. Are you kidding me, man?
That's amazing.
But, right. But I'm hiding behind Robbie, right? Because I'm exhausted. I'm looking over at Lee Labrada downstage, and I'm whispering to Robbie because he knows I'm hiding behind him, and he's letting me. And I go, Robbie, I go, what the hell is that? I go, how does he do that? He goes, what, Flex? You know, because Robbie's really, you know, abrupt and hard, and you're like, what? And I said, how is he standing down here like that without being tired, man? He goes, what, Lee? And I go, yeah. And he goes, man, you're looking at a pro's pro. And I was like, huh. So after the show, you know, me and Lee got along great. You know, he had told me at that time, he goes, I'm thinking about quitting, Flex. I go, why? And he goes, because you're here. You know, I have to accept that, you know, you're better than me. You're the future. I'm the past. I go, get out of here, Lee. I go, but let me ask you a question. And he goes, what? I go, how do you do that? And he goes, how do I do what? I go, how do you stand up there like a statue, like you never get tired? He goes, what do you mean? I go, how do you do that? And he goes, I don't understand your question. What are you asking me? He goes, Flex, you practice. What do you mean? I go, what do you mean you practice? He goes, you practice, man. You go to the gym and you practice. Just like you go to the gym and you train? I go, yeah. He goes, you go to the gym and you practice it. I was like, oh, really? He goes, yeah, that's how you master it. You practice. You can't master it out here on stage, and you can't master it 3 days before a show. You have to practice it so it becomes second nature. I'm like, huh. And from that time on, every show, we went in the room and we practiced on posing. And it's an honor to try to give that back to some of the guys. I want to toot my horn for saying I'm beyond honored and proud that I was able to pose, help you with your posing and work with you, and that you cared about your posing. Man. A lot of guys don't. I'm not going to throw any other names out there, but I was just looking on Instagram and Facebook, and I ain't gonna say these guys' name because I don't want to blow them up. They're friends of mine, but they had pictures of them with their stomachs just hanging out. I'm like, God dang, you imagine how embarrassing one must feel when their picture looks like they're like 9 months pregnant, and this is supposed to be an artistic sport, right? So I just don't think, to answer your question, Ben, I just don't think that they practice it, because if they did practice it, they'd be able to manage it and control it.
Dude, I completely agree with you, man. I mean, it's 100% the truth. And I say that to everybody. It's like nobody's waist grows. The abdominal muscles are so thin. If it grew, it would grow millimeters. Maybe your liver's inflamed. Maybe your intestines are inflamed. That's one thing. But, man, it's just control. It's laziness. And I'm guilty of it too, man. Back in the day, you guys were full-time consummate bodybuilders 365 days a year, man. You know, and I'll be honest, like, if that's not me, man, and I've got a business, I've got a family, and, dude, I mean, it's the truth, unfortunately. Like, I train, I love to train, but, like, the rest of the day, man, I'm working on family, I'm working on business, you know, posing for me is an afterthought, and as unfortunate as it is, like, until I'm 12 weeks out from a show, posing isn't even a thought, and that's not, man. I mean, that's, dude, you laugh, but it's the truth, and, you know, I wish I could commit more time to it, or maybe I need to if I'm going to win a big show. But that could be the problem, right? Is nobody spends that amount of level of commitment because we don't have that direct level of competition. Like, I know if I was competing against Phil or Kai for the top three in the Olympia, damn right I'm going to be busting my ass posing every single day because I'm going to whoop their ass. But I'm not even, like, everybody knows, well, it's Phil and Kai than everybody else, so nobody really cares enough.
Right. And you know what? Like I said, in our era, that was just something. I mean, I couldn't go and pose next to Sean or to Vince Taylor or Kevin Lerone or any of those guys, knowing that they were masters when it came to posing. And you hit it on a nail. When you're the champion, you have to have a certain criteria to take that champion down. So how am I going to be able to compete with these guys when they're polished as far as they look great. They're dialed in 100%. And on top of that, they know how to present themselves excellently. So we had to step our game up that way. And it was just an art form. It was something that we had to do back then. And, you know, because of the criteria has changed now. No, it'd take a different type of person who want to go and do that. But I I didn't think I had a lot of tools to beat guys. And once I understood about posing and Lee Labrada telling me about that, I said, well, I'm going to take this approach. I'm going to try to outpose everybody. You know, I remember one time when me and Kevin were competing in the Honor Classic, and I made it a point that I wanted to show that I was better than everybody else when it came to showing my body. So, you know, like now, right, everybody's like waiting for the next person to hit their pose. You know, I don't want to hit my pose before you do. I'm waiting. My purpose that I remember that year in 90, I think it was 96. I wanted to hit my pose 5 seconds before everybody else and hold it at least 2 seconds after they released their pose. And my whether it worked or not, actually I lost that show. Kevin won and I took second at the Honor Classic. But what my thought process was, if I can steal the judge's attention long enough that everybody else wouldn't get a fair advantage. So if I hit my pose first, your eyes are going to look at me. And then as everybody else hits their pose, it's going to scan around and look at everyone else. As everybody relax from their pose and you go back to me and I'm still holding my, I just got your attention again. So it didn't work out as far as me winning, but the accolade that I did get is, after that show, you know, Peter McGuff wrote that he thought I should have won and it was a joke and all that stuff. But the biggest accolade I got from him is he called me a pro amongst pros. He said Flex gave a posing exhibition amongst everybody else. And I'm like,
that's awesome.
I did it. You know, I did it. They seen that. So it was just something, like you said, it may come down to you got a crooked smile, or maybe your color isn't right. Or, you know, maybe right. Maybe you have, you know, a twitch or something like that. It may come down very much to that when you're going up against another formidable champion. Like you said, we had guys that I lost to. I mean, I've lost to Chris Kamara. I lost to Sean Ray. I've lost to Dorian. I lost to all these guys. So at any different time, we could walk in and win the show. So it was that thick, you know, and we had to take it to that next level of trying to, you know, so that we could showcase ourselves better than the other person.
So, all right, man, this is the Muscle Expert Podcast. So I need to teach people some stuff about how Flex really likes to train. No, seriously,
right.
Man, I want some of the best tips you've got for, you know, maybe a weak body part development. Or like, first of all, how often did you train, man? Did you train once a day, twice a day? And, you know, maybe a tip or two on maybe mindset stuff when you're training. What are you thinking about? What are you focused on? Let's give some people some golden nuggets for how they can improve their training and be more like Flex Wheeler.
Not a problem. First thing is, yeah, I train twice a day because, like you said, business wasn't the same as it is now. There's so many more options you have as an athlete to market yourself. We didn't have anything. We just had the magazine and photo shoots, which I hated doing. We didn't have the internet. We didn't, you know, nobody had their own clothing deal or all that stuff, or, you know, appearances that were done differently. So all we had was the art of competing. And hopefully if you competed, you would be seen in a magazine and then somebody would call you up and want you to do a guest appearance. So I trained twice a day. My training sessions, they just ended when it was done. You know, I had two training partners, me, Rico, and Chris, that we banged pretty much our whole career together. And as far as weak body part, I always believed in that if you have a weak body part, say if your day off is Sunday, your day off is Sunday. Well, you ate all day and you rested all day Sunday. So when you walk back in the gym Monday, you're completely fresh. You have all this nutrients, your micro-minerals are through the roof. You have your rest and everything. So train your weakest body part then, because as you go through your training regimen daily or doing double sessions, you're diminishing. You're diminishing, you know. So I would always have my strongest body part at the end of my workout curve and my weakest body part at the beginning. For me, for a long time, it was my leg. So leg day was always Monday. Was always Monday. Now, we change, whether we bang 3 days on, 1 day off, or we bang 4 days on, 1 day off, and then sometimes when it got closer to a show, we would bang 6 and 7 days a week. It just depends, but always the weakest body part is always done when you're at your freshest. So that's the day after you had your day off in the a.m. because you're at your freshest.
Let me ask you this. How many guys in your era train twice a day?
Pretty much everybody. I don't know nobody in my era who didn't. I mean, me, Lee LaPriest, Sean Ray, Kevin, Dorian. I don't know if Dorian did. I don't think Dorian did back then. Paul Gillette. Oh, we all did. We all banged twice a day.
Let me ask you this. How many guys that compete now you think train twice a day?
You know, I don't know. I know there's a few athletes that I work with, and I try to put them on a double-day regimen, and they look at me like I'm effing crazy. But I think I don't know if it too many do or not. I don't know.
Honestly, not to toot my horn, but I think I'm the only guy. Like, when I get into a show, it's for at least 16 weeks. I'm doing 2-a-days. And people think I'm the anomaly, man. Oh, you're overtraining. You're doing too much. I'm like, man, that's what you do. You know, that's what you do. And I don't think I know anybody else that does it, to be honest.
No, we did. I mean, I guess, you know, like you said before, it's different. It was our lifestyle back then. So if I wasn't training in a gym, what the hell else am I going to do? So even in the off season when we were effing off, we still went and we banged twice a day. It was just what we did. But, you know, now I understand, you know, when you're increasing your caloric intake, you know, because off season I ate more garbage. I ate more fattier foods. I'm a carbohydrate freak. So I would have a lower caloric intake because I ate more fattier foods. I'm full more often. So as I dialed into going into my off season, to my pre-contest, to my pre-off season, I would start moving my caloric intake up. The only way I could do that is by burning off a great amount. So my workouts enable me to be able to move up from 3,000 calories a day to 7,000 and 8,000 calories a day because I burned that off, and my body then demanded it. So I guess there's more ways than more than one way of skinning a cat. You know, so I can't say that they're wrong. But my mind frame, as you asked before, my mind frame and my mentality, listen, a journey of 1,000 miles start with one step. If I can take more steps per day to get to my end of my journey, I'm getting there quicker. That was my mind frame. So,
amazing, man. What's the website like to pick up your DVD?
The website is, you can go to
daretodream.com.
I think it is daretodream.com. I'm looking real quick. Also, you can go to my YouTube page, which is The Official Flex Wheeler, and you can see all my videos and you can see the previews to Dare to Dream. Also, it's being sold on our website that we actually have, and that website is it's not Dare to Dream, it's www.d2dmovie.com, because Dare to Dream was already taken. So it's www.d2, the letter, not writing it, d2dmovie.com.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll put it on my blog and my website as well, man, so everyone will be able to access it that way. But, I'm looking forward to it. What an awesome phone call. What an awesome interview, man. Thank you. I think people are going to get way more value than they would expect, and I'm sure you can get a lot of people very interested in buying your DVD, man.
No, it's an honor, Ben. I have so much respect for you. I remember the first time that you actually popped up on my radar. I remember one of the times, candidly, we were over at the FIBO, and your booth was right across from my booth. And I was thinking to myself, who is this big motherfucker over here? You know, and you had your head on all sideways, and I don't think we said one word to each other. And I seen you there again another year, and then finally we made contact. So it's great to see how you evolved. It's great to now see that, you know, you're a family man, and you're enduring that, and just how you're handling your business professionally all over the world. So, you know, the greatest accolade one can get is from one of their peers or a person in their sport to respect another person's work. I just want to personally know it has truly been an honor to be able to work with you on occasion, to sit there and have you call me your friend, and for us to kick it at a show and be able to talk to each other and about the show. Man, that's just beautiful, especially for an old donkey like myself. So it's greatly appreciated, man, and I look forward to watching you continue killing it on stage.
Dude, thank you so much. And you know I'm going to blow you up to help me pose again and probably help me with my prep again this year if we can find the time. I'd love to have you out to my gym and get some sessions.
Consider
in,
it done.
There's nobody I respect more. You know that, man. Thank you so much, Flex.
It's an honor. Thanks, B. I'll talk to you later.
And enjoy ice cream with your daughter and tell her I say have a great
night. I will.
Give her a big hug and a kiss for me, man. All right,
I will. I will bye-bye. Definitely, bro. Later.
See you,
thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter @ IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.